Translation: O all auspicious Yogamaya, I shall then appear with my full 6 opulences as the son of Devaki, and you will appear as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, the queen of Maharaj Nanda. Purport. Pashla Prabhupada. The word Amshabhagena is important in this verse. In Bhagavad Gita 10:42, the Lord says, Athava bahunaitena kim gyatena tavarjuna vishtabhayam hidam kritsnam ekam shena stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjun, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Everything is situated as a part of the Supreme Lord's potency. In regard to Lord Krishna's appearance in the womb of Devaki, Brahma played a part also, because on the bank of the milk ocean, he requested the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear. A part was also played by Baladev, the first expansion of Godhead. Similarly, Yogamaya, who appeared as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, also played a part. Thus, Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, and Shakti Tattva are all integrated with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Krishna appears, he appears with all his integrated parts. As explained in previous verses, Yogamaya was requested to attract Sankarshan, Baladev, from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, and this was a very heavy task for her. Yogamaya naturally could not see how it was possible for her to attract Sankarshan. Therefore Krishna addressed her as Shubhe, auspicious, and said, Be blessed, take power from me, and you will be able to do it. By the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can do anything, for the Lord is present in everything, all things being His parts and parcels, Amshabhagena, and increasing or decreasing by His supreme will. Balaram was only 15 days older than Krishna. By the blessings of Krishna, Yogamaya became the daughter of Mother Yashoda, but by the supreme will she was not able to enjoy the parental love of her father and mother. Krishna, however, although not actually born from the womb of Mother Yashoda, enjoyed the parental love of Mother Yashoda and Nanda. By the blessings of Krishna, Yogamaya was able to achieve the reputation of being the daughter of Mother Yashoda, who also became famous by the blessings of Krishna. Yashoda means one who gives fame. Srila Prabhupada ki. So it might be helpful just to read the previous 2 verses. The Lord, in text 7, the Lord ordered Yogamaya, My potency, who are worshipable for the entire world, and whose nature is to bestow good fortune upon all living entities, go to Vraj, where there live many beautiful cowherd men and their wives. In that very beautiful land, where many cows reside, Rohini, the wife of Vasudev, is living at the home of Nanda Maharaj. Other wives of Vasudev are also living there incognito because of fear of Kamsa. Please go there. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion known as Sankarshan or Shesha. Without difficulty, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. And then today's verse, O all auspicious Yogamaya, I shall then appear with my full 6 opulences as the son of Devaki, and you will appear as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, the queen of Maharaj Nanda. So the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is setting out his plan. He's been invited to come to this world, obviously seeing that the world is in a terrible state, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. So to re-establish the principles of religion, he's advented, of course, at the request of his devotees. So the demigods all complained, the demigods, Mother Earth, they went to Lord Vishnu to complain that the situation on earth was very, very bad and that people were struggling. The righteous brahmanas were oppressed. Society as a whole was being led by these demoniac kings under the care of Jarasandha and Kamsa. And the petition they made was accepted by the Lord and he agreed to advent. And now this is the whole preceding leela before the Lord actually appears. Actually in the 9th canto we got a an indication of the whole lineage in which Krishna comes. And there an entire tracing is given of the different families, the dynasties of the moon, the dynasties of the sun, eventually all working up to the point where Krishna appears. And obviously when Krishna appears, he doesn't just appear. He comes obviously with a big fanfare. Previously he's instructed all the demigods and their wives to take birth amongst the members of the Yadu dynasty and to assist him in various pastimes. And now in order to prepare the womb of Devaki, Balaram is appearing as the seventh child. And this gives us an indication of Balaram's important position in terms of facilitating anything that the Lord does. Now, Prabhupada is very careful to mention in his purport that many, many persons are involved in this whole Leela. He says, a part was played by Brahma and the demigods, as we discussed. A part was also played by Baladev, the first expansion of Godhead. Similarly, Yogamaya, who appeared as the daughter of Mother Yashoda, also played a part. So Prabhupada mentions that Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva and Shakti Tattva are all integrated with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And obviously when he appears, all of these parts appear with him. So it's very important, these three aspects, because these three aspects are also exactly what Srila Vyasadev contemplated in his vision, right at the start of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Initially, after Vyasadev composed all the Vedic literatures, the Itihasas, the Puranas, and he was feeling a great deal of dissatisfaction. We may be surprised, why does one feel dissatisfied after compiling Vedic literature? Well, this is a dissatisfaction which is on a transcendental level. It is a vision which sees that despite having so much information, knowledge, techniques for material progress, there is actually very little there that will directly, without ambiguity, induce one to surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. So in this mood, he receives the mercy of Narad Muni, who comes to his cottage and who discusses with him and encourages him to contemplate within himself. After Narad Muni leaves, after describing his own journey as a devotee, Srila Vyasadeva does indeed enter into this contemplation. And it's described he sees the Supreme Lord. In the core of his heart, he sees the Supreme Lord along with his external energy. Prabhupada explains that the jivas, the living entities, were also part of that vision. So here we have the three components again: Vishnu Tattva, Shakti Tattva, and Jiva Tattva. Of course, in that contemplation of Vyasadeva's, his main focus was the external energy. And here the main focus is Yoga Maya, the yoga version of Maya, which is termed as the internal energy. Now, in one sense, they're the same. But we have to be very careful when we mix up different types of descriptions in a single discussion. Yes, we understand that the Lord's energies ultimately all emanate from Him. He's the supreme energetic and He has unlimited energies. Parasya shaktir vididhai vishruyate. And His internal potency, which here is Yogamaya, obviously His internal potency has many aspects, the pleasure-giving, ladini potency. But here specifically, the Yogamaya aspect is being described. And Yogamaya manifests in a very unagreeable form for the non-devotees. That is, of course, Mahamaya. So while Yogamaya and Mahamaya are actually the same, they're the energy of the Lord, in the way they manifest, there is a complete difference. And it is very important for practicing devotees to start off with a clear understanding of that difference. Prabhupada emphasizes it constantly. If we take shelter of the external energy of the Lord, we will simply be in this world going round and round in circles, literally. Because the mode of transmigration is described as a circle, as one transmits from one body to another body, to another body, to another body. One who is sure to die, one who has died is sure to take birth again. And as soon as one takes birth, one grows, one produces some effects, one dwindles, one dies, and then one takes birth again. This is the cycle which takes place in the material world. And that cycle is presided by Durga Devi, Mahamaya. So in some verses near this one, it's described how Maya Devi will accept different names. And she'll be worshipped in this material world. Because she has the ability to fulfill people's desires. So they naturally will turn to her. So that's why if you go to India, if you visit most places, you'll see a Durga temple there. And she's known as by different names in different parts. That's coming later, so I won't go into that. But she is a form of the Lord's internal potency, which is external because her purpose is to bewilder. Her purpose is to bewilder and cover the living entities. That's her job. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Shadana Shakti Rekha. So she is in charge of creation, maintenance, disillusion, as the Brahma Samhita says. And she's known in this world as Durga. Chayeva yasya bhavanani bibarti Durga. Chayeva, she's a shadow of the true internal potency. So the internal potency can do tremendous work, tremendous service for the Lord. And Yogamaya is now being given a task. She's been assigned a service by the Lord. And we've been hearing about the glories of Baladev. She's been assigned a service which is very serious, very heavy. Baladev is a serious personality. There are many occasions when different individuals have crossed Baladev's path in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they didn't survive too long after that. He's a very powerful first expansion of the Lord, as Prabhupada says here. He's the first expansion of Godhead. Essentially non-different from Krishna, but just the servitor form of Godhead. So here is Yogamaya, the energy of the Lord, wondering, how can I move what is essentially the energetic? I've been asked to transport Baladev from this womb to the other. How can I possibly do that? It's just not possible. A parent can very easily pick up their child and take them from one place to another. But if the child is asked to lift their parent from here to there, it's a daunting task. And this is exactly what Yogamaya is thinking. But just to reassure her, Krishna says, O auspicious one, there is nothing that you will not be able to do if you are not empowered by me. Through my empowerment, anyone can achieve anything. So he is essentially giving the request, and through that request, empowerment also comes. And that's exactly the same principle that we also follow and understand. In our spiritual life, sometimes we may be given a mission or a task, something to do, and it could be overwhelming. I mean, in one sense, each one of us has been given an overwhelming task to assist Lord Chaitanya in his mission. That's nothing small. Lord Chaitanya appeared, in that, as you see in the beautiful picture there, with Lord Nityananda, with his associates, the Panchatattva. We take their mercy, their blessings before any attempt to chant the holy name. Prabhupada writes in one place, in Kali Yuga it is especially important for us to chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, the Panchatattva Mantra, before attempting to chant the Maha Mantra. Because technically we have no real qualification to chant Krishna's names. So we chant, we get the blessings of the Panchatattva, especially Lord Nityananda, and we are empowered through that to recite Krishna's name. So empowerment is definitely something that comes from a competent person. Here you have the Lord himself, very competent by all standards. In the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada quoted this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, Atava Bahunaitenya. Ekam shena stito jagat. What is the need for all this complicated knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So this is, of course, happening in a chapter which speaks of the opulence of the Absolute. And in there we hear, earlier on, how Krishna explains the Chatur Shloki Gita, how he is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. He explains that I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. And the wise who actually know this engage in my service. So it's one thing for us to understand that the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is the Supreme. There's a great deal of description Krishna gives himself. After this Chaturshloki recitation, Krishna, Arjun agrees. He says, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. And then he goes on to explain that, yes, I now accept you as the Supreme Lord. Not just because I think so, or because you've said so, but because it's confirmed by the other authorities. Asita Devala Vyasaha Swayam Chaiva Bravishime. So he says that these great personalities are simply confirming your divine status and your supreme status. Now this actually happens a few times, because after this elaborate description that Krishna then goes into, because Arjuna petitions him to give more details of his position within this world. So practically the whole of chapter 10 in the Gita is concerned with how Krishna manifests through different aspects of this creation. How he's the light of the sun, the taste of the moon, the fragrance of the earth. And it's quite an extensive description. And at the end of it, Arjuna is amazed. He says, I fully accept your position now. You are the Supreme Lord. So we'll see, actually Arjuna has his faith and his intensity of absorption in the Lord reinforced many times. Of course, his initial point of surrender was in chapter 2, where he says, I am now a soul surrendered unto you, please instruct me. Shishyastiham shadi mam tuamrapannam. That, of course, was the beginning of Krishna's direct instructions to Arjuna. Once he had put aside his disagreements, his lamentations, his fear, his problems, his depression, once he decided to put that aside, he was in a fit condition to actually hear from Krishna. But then, of course, he doesn't know very much at that point, at least in the Leela. We're not speaking again on the Tattva principle, where Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord and he's fully aware of everything. We're speaking specifically within that storyline, where Arjuna definitely exhibits bewilderment and he needs Krishna's divine words to purify him of that. So this is one occasion where he again reinforces his faith in Krishna. Then after seeing the universal form, which happens in the next chapter, once again Arjuna's faith is reinforced. So it does start with a preliminary faith. Prabhupada does explain in the Gita that if we're actually going to understand the Gita, we have to approach the Gita with some theoretical faith in Krishna. We have to theoretically accept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, that he has something useful to say, and that his devotee is competent to hear it. If we don't come to that point, there really is no point picking up the Gita, because we will not get anything out of it. It will simply be just some ordinary person talking to some other ordinary person, having a nice philosophical discussion. We should not think we have the monopoly on philosophical discussions, and that all philosophical discussions actually are valuable. They are not. Up and down the universities of this country, in various clubs, various societies, various forums, people are discussing all types of philosophy. Most of it is centered around the body. The body, its interactions, matter, the material world. All of it, ultimately, as Bhagavatam describes, is Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. So there is a distinction between that type of discussion and the type of discussion that is centered solely around Krishna. So when Krishna gives knowledge about himself, the devotees become enlivened. With that knowledge, they engage more in his service. And the cycle simply continues. So rather than being a vicious cycle, we can actually call it a cycle of upliftment. The vicious cycle of chewing the chewed is that we engage in some activities of sense gratification. Our mind becomes conditioned to that. We carry on the process. We like it. We suffer tremendously. We do it again. In the end, punascharvita charvaranam, we chew the chewed again and again, right through different births in this world. So the technique for us to be free of that is exactly the process that's given in the Gita. Krishna gives elaborate explanations of himself in this chapter, not in many chapters, and not in many places either. Krishna generally doesn't have a great need to keep describing the glories of himself. He's already situated in his place. He already has hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis and Gopis worshipping him in Goloka Vrindavan. Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrama Sevyamanam. He has no need for anyone or anything. But he very much likes the idea that his jiva tattva, which is not really meant to be separated, it's meant to be with him. We always have these three aspects. We have the Vishnu Tattva, Shakti Tattva, Jiva Tattva. We have the Lord Himself, we have His material energy, we have the marginal potency, Jiva Tattva. He doesn't like it when the Jiva Tattva takes shelter of the external energy. The correct place for that Jiva Tattva is to be at the lotus feet of the Lord. Place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Stita Dhuli Sadrisham Vichintaya. So when the devotee develops that consciousness, the devotee actually becomes happy. This is the actual secret, that devotees know what it takes to become happy. They know that by trying to lord it over material nature, and by trying to increase their own glories and fame and prestige in this world, they will not actually become happier. Only devotees actually understand this. No one else in the material world gets it, because they've been systematically trained in exactly the opposite from day one. Even if someone is a good person, if they're very charitable by nature, very kind by nature, if they don't have the understanding that the Supreme Lord is the place where we should all be, ultimately their activities are influenced by some degree of motive. Some motive either personal or collective, some motive based upon feeling good about oneself. There's charity in different modes that's described. And there's charity in the mode of ignorance, which is given to a person who is unworthy at the wrong time and place, in the wrong circumstances. Then there's other types of charities. There are charities which are given to a worthy, deserving person with no personal desire for benefit. But still often you will find that philanthropists, or those who engage in charity work, they develop a sense of pride. And that's one of the driving motivations. That I'm feeling good about myself that I've now helped out someone. Of course, the helping out is great. That's very good. It's also described in the Bhagavatam how traditionally different persons, if they were wealthy merchants or if they were kings, they would engage in different charitable activities, including, for example, planting trees, digging wells, building temples. These are some charitable activities described in the Bhagavatam. Generally, with all of these cases, a sense of pride does develop. So, when in the realm of pure devotion, one attempts to do activities for Krishna which are devoid of that pride and which are done simply for the satisfaction of the Lord. So, here we have this example that Yogamaya is given the task of transferring Baladev to another womb. And it's a whole adventure even before the adventure begins. Of course, we know what happens after Krishna appears. Right on cue, Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. When he appears, there's a whole fanfare. The demigods are already appearing in different hidden forms to actually worship Krishna as soon as he appears in the womb of Devaki. And then after he appears, there's a whole adventure. It's raining. He's in a prison. There's a thunderstorm. And he has to be transported. So there's a lot of transporting of babies going on, before they're born and after they're born. And it really just indicates that it's unusual. This is an unusual circumstance for an unusual personality. And then, of course, we know all the pastimes in Krishna book. We've just worked our way up to Canto 10. The next several chapters are full of exquisite pastimes of the Lord. How when he's a small baby, he destroys an entire cart, which is many times bigger than him. He gets attacked by numerous demons. He finishes them all off. All around him, his associates are chanting prayers for his protection. His mother and father are thinking that he's suffering. He naturally seems to be attracting bad luck all the time. So they're always chanting different mantras, worshipping to different personalities, doing different yantras, tantras for his protection. All a wonderful irony. Krishna puts himself in that position and completely demonstrates that he's not at all bothered about having a particular position. In Vraj, he does not need to strut around as the Lord of everything. That we've covered in the first 9 cantos. We've understood Krishna's supreme position. In this verse we read also, Ekam Sena Stito Jagat. We know clearly where Krishna is. He's that string beneath the garland. You may remember that's a verse. Sutre Manigana Iva. That just as pearls are strung on a thread, Krishna underlies this entire material creation. So we can just look to the garlands of the Lord. And generally, an expert garland maker, you will not see the thread. That's Krishna. He's so expert that no one can see him if he chooses not to reveal himself. So there are many people who are attempting to describe the Lord based upon their lack of knowledge. And ignorance is never a good platform to make big speeches from. If we don't know who the Supreme Lord is, we shouldn't act as if we do. Now, of course, there's subtle components to this concept as well. It's not just that people are discussing Krishna and they don't really understand. That definitely happens. But if they're sincere, ultimately, their lack of knowledge isn't an impediment. If they're sincerely trying to describe the glories of the Lord, He will empower them in due course. The problem comes when someone has another motive, and they may attempt to use Krishna's name to justify something that they're doing. And then there's the whole subtle aspect as well, where rather than attempting to describe the glories of the Lord, people then engage in sense gratification, and they portray that as being supreme. That is another attempt for someone to act like the Lord. And therefore they induce the entire world. The entire world is currently running on consumerist ideology. Buy this, do this, the economy will keep going. Be happy, do this, go to this country, get this ingredient, make this item, ship it all over the world. This is the ideology that seems very popular at the moment. But it's not actually anything to do with the real Krishna. But in most people's minds, their TV is their God. Google is their God. The different items that modern science has produced, and then the different industries, they are their worshipable objects. So although they won't ever admit, oh, I'm worshipping this as God, actually they're doing it. They're completely giving their entire life energy, their valuable human energy, to a materialistic civilization. And that's a form of Mayavad. It's illusion. So even if someone isn't directly trying to declare themselves to be Krishna and acting as Krishna, they may do so in this subtle way, and that's more dangerous. So Krishna, as we were saying, he has spoken of his glories, and now he's at the point where he's simply going to relax. He's going to do many miracles. He's simply going to enjoy himself. He's now going to voluntarily submit himself to the will of his devotees. We know how Lakshman was upset in previous ages when the story of the Ramayana took place. And he wasn't happy that he had to follow Lord Ram's order on a number of occasions. So he decided that I will take birth older than the Lord, so he can't boss me around next time. This is why Prabhupada says here, Balaram was only 15 days older than Krishna. So that is the Lord's arrangement. He first of all appeared as the seventh child, purified the womb of Devaki, then was transported to Rohini, who is another wife of Vasudev, but living in Braj due to the atrocities of Kamsa. And then he engaged in so many different activities while there. So, as the older brother, of course he had a certain license to make preparations, to interact with the Lord. But he also plays amusing roles at different times. We were discussing how Balaram is not someone to be messed with. He's an extremely potent person. So this recitation of the Bhagavatam actually has a strong influence of Balaram, but not perhaps in the way we would expect. This Bhagavatam was recited, especially the second time, or third time you can say, because there have been many recitations, by the sages. It was heard by the sages of Naimisharanya, by Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami is the son of Ramaharshan, right? And Ramaharshan had a special pastime with Balaram. Balaram killed him. That was the pastime. Ramaharshan was a great reciter. He was speaking in an assembly. Balaram appeared. And now one injunction is that one should not arise from the Vyasasan while the discourses are going on. If one is giving a discourse on Krishna, there's nothing that should interrupt that. So if someone's talking about Krishna, they're not supposed to get up. However, if Balaram turns up, you better get up. Because Balaram saw what he detected, what he thought was impudence. And he thought, here is Ramaharshan sitting there, speaking, I've just arrived. So he took a blade of grass and just killed him. Blade of grass. But that he'd already been given a benediction, that he would live a long life, and that he would speak. So then the sages somehow reconciled this and said, your son, who is considered an expansion of you, he will actually carry on. And then this Suta Goswami is actually the key instrument by which we're hearing the Bhagavatam. Of course, within Bhagavatam's story within the story, as we know, Suta Goswami, sages of Naimisharanya. Then within that, there's the pastime of Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadev Goswami. Within that, Shukadev Goswami describes the stories of Maitreya Muni, Vidura, the pastimes of Uddhava. So no one really likes to keep exclusively adding their own versions. They keep referring back up the chain, back to, in this history at this time, a similar incident took place. You're asking, how is it that Krishna allowed demons such as Shishupal, Dantavakra to attain liberation? Well, back then, at some time long ago, this also happened in this circumstance. So this is part of the process. We are hearing many aspects here which are very much linked to a practicing devotee's mood. We've heard how everyone plays a part. We all play a part in the Lord's mission under the invite of a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. We all play a part. We have our different roles. We conduct our roles. We are engaged in service. Requests are made of us. And those making the requests are also meant to be empowered to give us the strength to carry out those requests. Some of Prabhupada's disciples were given pretty big requests. Go to Russia, start the movement there. Go to China. Go to Africa. Quite big. Our requests might be perhaps not in that category. They might be, we need you to do an extra day's deity service this week. That could be the request. Or we need more flowers. Or there's no one to serve the breakfast. Can you come? Or can you do another day on the streets? These are likely to be the types of requests we'll get. But in spirit, there's no difference. If we actually accept those, whatever the difficulties are, and as long as the person or the process that's making that request is empowered, there's no way we will lose out under any circumstance. We stand to advance from any service that's rendered. Yogamaya is given such a heavy service here, and as in future verses we'll see, she accepts the order on her head with the word Om, fully intending to carry out the order. So this also has another parallel in terms of it's the mood that one takes when receiving instructions from the spiritual master. There's a whole parallel with the acharyas they make with this verse, that this is how an instruction is given to a disciple. A disciple is given some instruction, they're normally bewildered. How will I do this? But if they surrender to the instruction, they're also empowered to carry it out. And as I was mentioning in the beginning, we have all been given an instruction by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, that we have to try to make every single person in this world Krishna conscious. Now that's a tall order. There are something like 6-7 billion people in this world. We have a lot of work to do. It's a big order, but the empowerment is there. Krishna is not just there smiling with his beautiful garland, with his devotees, all chanting before him every day. He's the source of inspiration for every single person. And the inspiration of the Lord ultimately keeps one going in spiritual life. So perhaps we can accept the order of the Lord on our head, just as Yogamaya does in this verse, and we can try to act as the instrument that will assist him in his mission. So I'll stop there, if there's any questions, comments.